Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
That's my absolute pleasure.
Well, Sarah, I know that you came to nursing as someone who had a degree in another field already, and I thought we might start off with you talking about what was your first degree and why did you decide to go into nursing?
Sure. My first degree was in African American Studies at Harvard as an undergraduate, and I was very interested in health policy, and I thought it would be interesting to learn about health and history from the perspective of African Americans. I grew up in Washington, D.C. when it was 90% African American. And becoming a nurse, I was slow to do that, partly because I come from many generations of doctors and hadn't thought about nursing. But after college, I was a lobbyist helping nurses advocate on behalf of nursing. And as I listened closely to what they said they were doing, I was fascinated by the chance that they had to both be with people at such vulnerable moments and also to speak clearly from that truth to people in power. So I started volunteering at a free clinic and really fell in love with that therapeutic relationship one gets with a patient.
That's a pretty amazing story, I'm really glad that you've moved from computers over to nursing. That's fabulous. So I'm also interested in how you got interested in older adults. You're one of the nation's leaders in shaping how we think about aging and caring for older adults. What took you, when you went into nursing, you could have gone into any area, but you chose caring for older adults. Why?
Yes, well, I was slow to do that as well. Maybe I make good decisions, but after I've tried out all the other ones. So my first job as a nurse was with migrant farm workers, which was very, very interesting in rural Pennsylvania, peach and apple pickers. And then I worked with homeless middle-aged adults. 30 years ago, there weren't homeless older adults, which is a sad fact that now the older adult population who are homeless is really growing by leaps and bounds. And I had a grandmother who lived with me as a child, and she declined with Parkinson's and depression. And I think I wanted to work with anyone but older adults, partly because that had been so hard. But soon after I got my nurse practitioner degree, I started working with homebound older adults because the offer came along from someone who was very compelling to me. And she said, go shadow our nurse practitioner for a while and see what you think. And I also talked with our dean at the time, Dr. Martha Hill, who said...
That was dean at Johns Hopkins School of
Nursing. Sorry, yes, the dean at Johns Hopkins University School of Nursing, who is a fabulous strategic thinker. And she said... She told me about the demographic transition, about there were going to be more and more older adults, that this was going to be both a fantastic resource and a source of many challenges that needed to be solved. And so she got my strategic brain thinking, and in doing the shadowing, watching what families were going through, trying to keep their family members well and safe, was really eye-opening and life-changing for me. So I ended up working with older adults after working with other groups, but I think it all informs my work.
Well, it does, and I want you to tell us about what led you to develop CAPABLE, your model
right.
of care that we'll
mm-hmm.
describe in more detail.
Sure. So as a nurse practitioner with older adults who were homebound, some of them by medical conditions, some of them by physical disabilities, and a few of them homebound by their obesity. They literally could not get out of the bed. I was very strongly aware of the housing conditions around people and their functional needs. As nurse practitioners and physicians, when we see a patient in the clinic, we focus on their diseases and diagnoses and some prevention, like vaccines, but we don't typically picture their home because we haven't seen it. But when someone's in their home and you see them, it's completely obvious that just taking their blood pressure and asking about their medications is inadequate for assessing their overall health, and that overall health is not just diseases and symptoms, but is also much more basal levels of things like Can you walk easily to your kitchen table and sit down? Can you get your foot over the bathtub so that you can get into the bathtub to bathe yourself without a family member needing to assist you? So it was really revolutionary to me to see this. And one particular patient stuck out who was 100, and she was in a wheelchair that she maneuvered well through parts of her apartment, but she couldn't get it through her kitchen doorway. And at the door to her kitchen, she would get on her knees and crawl to her refrigerator and grab food. And this was someone who lived by herself and had worked hard all of her life and had no pension and was reduced to kneeling to grab at food. And she was really instrumental in me thinking through the issues that drove the Capable program that we'll discuss. She also was really inspirational because when social workers and I got her moved to a building that was a beautiful, refurbished, old schoolhouse with beautiful large windows and brand new carpeting and wide enough doorways, I was able to take her off of several of her diabetes medications and her blood pressure medications, even though she'd lived the same 100 years, doing the same job, had the same physiology, but the stress of not being able to take care of herself was partially removed. And that was really the aha moment of, wow, we shouldn't just be working on and with the patients. We should be working on and with the environments around them.
Well, that's an incredible story. I can picture her having to get on her knees to get into the kitchen and then sitting in front of large windows. What a difference in life experience, and particularly at that age. That's remarkable. So describe Capable to us.
Great, yeah. So Capable is a collaboration between occupational therapists, nurses, and people who fix people's homes. We for shorthand, call them handymen, even though that's a gendered term, and often the people working in the house are women. So Capable is time-limited. It's over 4 months. And it's a combination of those three disciplines. And each one goes individually to the home and works with the older adult to understand their goals, what they want to be able to do to live safely at home. So it's a very different model than addressing someone's diseases and diagnoses and symptoms. It's all based around eliciting what they would like to be able to do. I would like to be able to host a meal for my grandchildren. I would like to be able to stand long enough to prepare food. I would like to be able to get dressed, reaching into this closet to reach my clothes. Very, very simple functional things that then the occupational therapist and the nurse use their clinical reasoning to support the older adult's goals and needs, and together they come up with plan. Together with the participant, come up with ideas for how, what could be done to the home, and what the person could practice or try to do each of these. And we've found that we're cutting people's disability in half and decreasing their depressive symptoms from, on average, moderate to mild, which is a clinically significant difference that's as much as an antidepressant.
So I think many people are familiar with the work of nurses. I'm not sure that they're familiar with the work of occupational therapists. So maybe you could say a little bit more about what an occupational therapist does in this situation.
Great, yes. And I want to be sure to say that the ABLE part of Capable, the last four letters, is actually the ABLE program, which was developed by Dr. Laura Gitlin in Philadelphia in the 2000s. And she tested it in randomized controlled trials to great effect. And that was the occupational therapist piece and physical therapy and home modification. What we added to make it Capable is the nurse part and home repair. And I'm happy to talk about the difference between home modification and home repair. But so an occupational therapist, yes, most people don't know what they are, and I think they're fabulous members of the healthcare community, because if you think about it, so occupational therapists work together with older adults, or work with anyone in the life spectrum, on skills for living and being able to take care of themselves, being able to do whatever it is that they want to be able to do. So it's different depending on the patient population. With older adults, they often focus on activities of daily living, like bathing or dressing or grooming, or instrumental activities of daily living, things like how would you do the laundry more safely and effectively? How do you get down the stairs to the laundry to be able to do it without, you know, falling down the stairs, for example? And most times, occupational therapists in other models work with older adults without seeing their home. So this can be a real drawback because function has a great deal to do with the interaction between the person and their environment. When occupational therapists work with people in the home, it's often through home care. If there's been what people call a skilled need, for example, if someone had knee surgery or a heart attack and they would have home health. But it's very rare that someone gets preventive home health care with an occupational therapist and a nurse. And the capable model is entirely preventive. Someone has some difficulty with some kind of self-care, like they have difficulty getting dressed, for example. But it doesn't start when someone's been in the hospital for a crisis. It starts with someone saying, I'd like to be in this program. And our idea is that it prevents later decline in healthcare utilization, but is not after a crisis.
And Sarah, you were just saying that this program is particularly different, and I don't think most people realize this, that when you're on Medicare, the way you get home services is to go in the hospital first. It's very difficult to get home care services without that hospitalization. And so you're breaking out of that model, aren't you?
Yes, we are. And in fact, as you mentioned, it is very hard to get home health unless there's been something acute. It also could be that you have, a festering wound or something because you're completely bedbound. But some striking need is usually necessary to instigate a home health care, what they call episode, you know, series of visits. Mm-hmm. So capable is very different that way. So we're not just different in repairing people's homes and combining occupational therapy and nursing, and also by going by people's functional goals rather than their medical diseases and diagnoses, but also that it's essentially preventive in nature and that anyone with any decrease in abilities could benefit from capable.
So tell us about the handyman services. What is it that people are doing that's key?
Great. So the way the handyman part works is the occupational therapist elicits the older adult's functional goals and what's important to them to work on. So they may say, I'm not really good at taking my medications on my own, but it's okay because my daughter fills a medication box. So then that's not a priority to them. So we don't do anything that's not the person's priority. So together, the occupational therapist and the older adult make a work order for the home repair specialist, the handyman. And it's in the priority order of the older adult, not in the order of the occupational therapist. And that is a different thing than many of us in healthcare experience. It's not our goals, it's the older adult's goals. And so the work order is then transmitted in a secure file to the handyman, who can generally get the work done in one day's work. So they usually visit the home once quickly to look at what supplies they'll need and measure it, and they come back and they spend a whole day doing a range of things. And on average, our work orders have about 17 things that are done or that are ordered for them. So it may be a second banister, for example. Someone's goal may be that they want to not sleep on their couch. They want to sleep in their own bed upstairs. And to do that, we may add a second banister. The nurse will help work on strength and balance. We'll add lighting. And with practice and energy conservation, the older adult can get upstairs. So as I mentioned, there's 17 things on average. Some of those are tangible things, like a chair you can sit in the shower because you're too weak to stand long enough to bathe. Some of those are repairs, such as if someone's got holes in their floors or linoleum that is crumbling or curling up. Some of it is lighting. It's a full range. It's as individual as the people are.
Mm. And what do you do if it's an apartment and really it's a landlord's responsibility to repair that hole in the floor?
That is what we have done. When someone has a landlord, we show them the work order because, of course, we need their permission. Many times they will say, okay, I'll do the items that should be done in my view, and you can order the extra material.
Mm-hmm.
But we will repair things without it being the capable participant's mm-hmm. property.
So who's paying for this? Medicare paying for it?
Right. So the projects that we've done in Baltimore so far have been with research dollars. And so about 300 of them have been through National Institutes of Health dollars. And then 250 have been done by Medicare and Medicaid, it's CMS. Since we've been getting excellent results, other places have started to adopt this model, and it's varied who's paying for it. In each setting, it has been additional money entering the system, but each place is capturing the cost outcomes with the idea that it will be sustainable, and I'm happy to go into our cost results.
Yeah,
as well. It is saving money.
Yeah, what to share all the kinds of results, not just cost, but clinical results, too, that
right.
you have.
Right. So one of the most important things that older adults care about are things that are called activities of daily living. And this is research code for things like, can you get dressed? Can you take a bath? Can you groom? Can you eat? You know, someone with Parkinson's, for example, can have very shaky hands and food gets everywhere. And if you give them $7 weighted spoons, the shaking can stop and they can feed themselves.
Mm.
So if you look at those domains, we're cutting in half the number of domains that people have difficulty with, the ADLs. And on IADLs, we're cutting it more by about 40%. And another way of looking at that is of the people who have participated in CAPABLE, 75% of them have improved their ADLs over the four-month period, and 65% have improved their instrumental activities of daily living. And this is really remarkable because this is over time, and it's very low-income older adults. The results I was just telling you are people who are all Medicaid and Medicare eligible. And so many studies are pleased when people don't decline over that time period. Of people who are so vulnerable, but to actually improve. And on average, the improvement is 50% improvement. In other words, they go from about 4 on average, different areas of having difficulty, like bathing, dressing, grooming, walking across a small room. They go from 4 to about 2 on average, which is really remarkable. We're very excited about it.
And then what about nursing home placements? Do you track that?
Mm-hmm. We do track that, and we have so the National Institutes of Health randomized controlled trial. We don't have results on that until March of 2017, and the data that we have already on nursing home admissions is from our CMS trial, which is Center for Medicare and Medicaid mm-hmm. Services Innovation Project. For that, we had 250 people that we provided CAPABLE to, and then the government matched for us 10 times that many people, so 10 times 250 people, and each CAPABLE participant was matched on paper to 10 people who were their same age, race, gender, zip code, number of chronic conditions, and the amount of healthcare spending that was assigned to them, you know, the amount they were in the hospital or the amount they were in a nursing home or the emergency room prior to 2012. So they were very closely matched. So it's like having a control group of 10 times the number of people. And so we've looked at nursing home admission for that comparison group to our folks. And the comparison group went into a nursing home at about a 5% rate, and our people went in about a 1% rate.
Wow.
And we only need a 2% rate difference to pay for the whole program.
Wow.
We also found dramatic reductions in hospitalizations. And conceptually, you would predict that we would cause fewer nursing home admissions. But if you think about it, older adults are much more likely to be hospitalized in any given year. Mm-hmm. And so it does make more sense. It does make sense that we would be decreasing that as well. And then, so it looks like we're saving $10,000 in a year for each capable participant compared to that 10-to-1 matched group.
Wow. So,
and the program only costs $3,000. So
you
can pay for it per person over that 4-month period. So if those data hold up, someone could pay for themselves when they're on saving and 2 other people by the amount they save the healthcare system. And of course, they're happier and can move around and engage in the community and take care of family members better. We have a number of people who are foster parents, actually. Who are older adults who now can get up and down the stairs and do the laundry and do all kinds of things that it was very difficult for them to do before they were incapable.
Now, Sarah, you're doing this in one community still?
So, no. So it's also in 4 cities in Michigan, Detroit, Flint, Saginaw, and Grand Rapids. A version of it is also in Bath, Maine. We've also just finished training for 4 places, for Greensboro, North Carolina, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, Burlington, Vermont, and San Diego, California. But those are all small sites, except for Michigan, where it's 400 people across those 4 cities. And in the Michigan setting, that's funded both by Michigan Medicaid and the Rita and Alex Hillman Foundation. And there, the state of Michigan has pledged to scale and spread capable to everyone on their nursing home waiver list, which I can describe what that is, in Michigan, if capable delays nursing home placement by 1 day in comparison to the rest of the similarly vulnerable population.
Wow.
So we'll find out that in June of 2017.
Wow. So given this, so we know that when you have a model of care like Capable, to do it in one community is one thing, but it may not be replicable and get the same outcomes in other communities. And so you're now poised to demonstrate that. And do you have any data suggesting that indeed the findings that you have that you just described are occurring not just in Baltimore, but in these other communities that are up and running?
Yes. So we do have good findings from Michigan that people are improving and that costs are being saved. We'll know the final analysis, as I mentioned, in the summer. In the other places, it's really just starting, and we're at an exciting time of deciding what needs to be exactly like Capable here in Baltimore and what can change for it still to have its strength. And What I know from being with a lot of participants and from going through our data are that the really key points are working with the older adults' own goals. If you get to a point where you're saying, so you should do this and you should do that and I told you you better do this, that is not capable, and that negates the secret sauce, which is the motivation of the older adult. So that is key, putting the older adults really listening to what they want to do, and then also is key is changing the home environment as the 4 months goes by and they're working on their own goals. Because if someone's trying to be able to get downstairs and they've been in there trapped for 2 years upstairs, which is not uncommon for some of the people that we've worked with, if what they want to do is be able to get downstairs, you can be doing all the brainstorming and action planning and cheerleading you want, but if they don't have that second banister yet and the lighting yet, it's not going to happen. You know, we've had just very simple things. We've had someone who would sit on a commode chair all day long right next to her bed, where her husband would just pull her out of the bed and put her on the commode chair because that's all he could manage, and she couldn't stand herself up. We just add $7 little risers that go under each corner of the bed and a grab bar that's sturdy enough to hold her standing up. And now she can sit herself down or start to walk around. These are tiny things, but we've learned they have to happen in the same time frame as the work with the nurse and the OT, because it's all part of, you know, interlocking gears that work together to unleash the older adult's motivation to try to do more and more.
Well, and it underscores the interaction that we all have with our environments, and the most immediate one being our home environment.
Exactly.
So you're spreading it, and I know that the way the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, created the CMMI, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, and that
right.
center was you got a grant from them. That enables you to help to spread it and evaluate the model. And CMMI's intentions, I believe, were to take models that demonstrated effectiveness at a scalable level, and then to find ways to support them if they indeed reduce the costs of Medicare and Medicaid. And so your model is potentially there as one of these innovations that could be adopted throughout the country. What are your thoughts about whether the new administration and the new Congress will be interested in trying to scale up this model and have it be part of Medicare and Medicaid?
That's a great question. I think that everyone loves their grandparents. Everyone loves their parents. I think independence is one of those deeply, deeply held American values. Mm-hmm. So is improving health while reducing costs. And I think the extent to which we can tap into the themes upon which we all agree, which I would say are more than the themes that we disagree on, mm-hmm. The more likely it is we would be able to scale and spread capable.
Well, I hope that's true. I hope it works out. It's a great model, and maybe you could share with people how to get more information about Capable.
Sure. Yeah. So our website is probably the simplest. It's nursing.jhu, for Johns Hopkins University, .edu/capable. And that has all of our paper. We've published 13 papers on it. It has some interviews. It has photographs. It has a 90-second movie of a capable participant talking very articulately about what she could do after she was done with it that she couldn't do before. That also has my email address. So that's probably the easiest, nursing.jhu.edu/capable.
And we've been talking today with Sarah Zanton. And let me spell that at S-Z-A-N-T-O-N. So if you Google her and Capable, you'll probably find that website that she was just talking about with Capable. Sarah is a nurse practitioner and professor of nursing at Johns Hopkins University, and she is the innovator of Capable, this fabulous program that we've been talking about today. Sarah, it's fabulous work, and no wonder they selected you to be one of the 50 top influencers on aging in 2016. Congratulations. Well deserved.
Thank you.
And thank you for sharing
so
this with our listeners. Thank you.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Diana.